bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjoe Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjoe Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is a troubled marriage, HR and IT. Our guests for today's show are John Gillespie, who's the COO with Iowa's Information Technology Enterprise Office, and he's also the CIO of Iowa, the former president of NASCIO. Hi, John. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great. Now, we also have Richard Thompson, who is the CIO of the Maine State Government. Good morning, Dick.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very good, sir. Lots of snow, but still keeping busy. And we also have Alicia Kellogg, who is the Director of Human Resources from the Maine State Government. How are you doing, Alicia?
Just right.
Very good.
Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to have you participate on our show. Given the topic, I mean, of course, this will automatically say deja vu. I've seen this before elsewhere, and in many companies, we also hear about this disconnect between HR and IT. And let's set the stage. We are in this day and age where IT and business both are changing rapidly. You have every day a different technology getting introduced or a skill mix that is required to keep things running and improved or to be improved at and take it to the next level. So the talent resources are required, and then there is a culture that is to be changed in order to move at a warp speed. With all that being said, is there truly a support system while IT leadership works very hard to make this happen, and in its own way, HR also works very hard to support, but is there a proper system, a set of policies, procedures, which is set in the right way to make this happen? John.
I think the challenge that we have, at least in government, is a lot of these systems were set up not necessarily to react as quickly as we'd like. Something we've been doing here in Iowa is we're talking about an apprenticeship program so that we can create interest on the part of the next generation of workers, where we know there's a challenge in attracting them into the IT workplace, to build interest among them. And then with our HR group, we're intimately involved together in trying to develop this program.
So, Dick, what do you think?
In my opinion, we are after the greatest degree of flexibility that we can have, and that in some cases is at cross purposes with the very purpose and the very support that we get from our HR organization. I need to be nimble. I need to be effective. I need sometimes very unique or difficult to find resources, and that creates a challenge for certainly both the HR and I, and Alicia's here that can explain that.
Alicia, please.
And part of that agility for us has been IT positions are direct hire. They don't go through HR. You know, Dick has the opportunity to, after the jobs are posted for 2 weeks, because we do operate under collective bargaining agreements, then he does not have to go through the HR system to get applicants. We can do recruitment for him, but he doesn't have to wait for us. Although, recent technologies, the waiting time is very short. We have only online applications, and we can create a certificate of names in just a very few minutes. All done in cooperation with IT.
Now, in this whole talent acquisition or retention supply chain, if you will, the way we identify a need to somebody writing a job description, to us understanding what we should be paying this individual and then finding the next steps, where do we see that the value is not being added? Because, Alicia, you just mentioned that so that Dick doesn't have to wait for you. The fact is that if the supply chain, if each incremental link in that supply chain was adding value, then the word wait would not exist.
You know, it's
in a state system.
Okay, I see the caveat is there.
Which was created to avoid patronage. And governments want that system to be somewhat slow so that there are controls over it. So to the extent that is legal, we can speed that up.
You know, I don't think that there's much difference between that and the private sector. What generally little experience I have there, I think John has a lot more, that there are always reasons for you to, or reasons for HR and for position control and evaluation and approvals that need to be made. Quite frankly, I could be more planful. I think that's a responsibility that IT needs to have. Things don't just happen as an emergency. I want flexibility, but I'm willing to sacrifice by being more planful. By doing those two things, I should be somewhat responsive. But I have to balance that with my sense for that fast food mentality. I have to have it now because I want it now.
And do you think realistically, whenever you go for that fast food, are you really eating healthy? What I mean by that is that are you really getting what you want if you don't go through the proper due diligence, which is anyway required?
Well,
let's see. John, you want to take it?
The challenge that we have in hiring is making sure that we follow the appropriate level of process and partner with our HR folks in making sure we follow good process to keep away from any thoughts that we weren't following good process. And simultaneously, we want to be able to move quickly. And the challenge for both groups is to find solutions to the systems that have been put in place over many years that protect us in a variety of ways from lots of accusations, so that we do the necessary amount of due diligence while also being able to have the fast food we want.
So, Alicia, if you were, say, whether you're in government or private sector, but being an HR professional and you look from an outside-in perspective, how do you see this talent acquisition and or identification of need process all the way to getting a talent on board should happen? What's your view?
Well, my favorite example of how this should happen is the way that some private companies hire, and that's on interview day when the candidate comes through the door, they speak to all the people that they need to speak to, and when they're on the way out the door later that afternoon, they're either given a letter saying, it was nice getting to know you, or a letter that says, we'd like to offer you a job. It's that quick.
But see, that's efficiency. How about effectiveness?
No, that's also effective. If you're going to, because part, especially in high turnover jobs, a big piece of effectiveness is efficiency. It's getting the best candidates first.
I will tell you that from my perspective, I would rather take just a little bit, and I emphasize a little bit more time to get the right person than to hurry and partake of the fast food and watch it not be what I had anticipated. For us, I use a blend of staff augmentation services and contracted services to meet some of those needs so that when I'm making an investment in an employee, I'm more certain to have a result from that investment.
Yeah.
So in your view, if I were to make a strawberry smoothie, it's up to me how much strawberry or how much yogurt do I put. It's like a mix which nobody has a specific recipe for.
Well, that's one thing that I always tell supervisors is there is no recipe book. It's a case-by-case situation, and if you've got a problem, call.
But I think that you're right, and if you have done a good job of making that smoothie, I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to keep it, and I'm going to use it as long as and as effectively as I can. And if you haven't, I should move on to something else.
Now, given that a business and IT both are moving and then they're changing and things get a little hazy, and so I guess is the situation about how to find the right talent. And that's why we say everything is fine, but there will always be some exceptions, so we have to use our gut feeling and play it by the ear how the things happen in a given situation. But all that being said, is that haziness, can that be reduced or removed if HR and IT were to communicate more often than not, or like even increase significantly the amount of collaboration and looking into each other's buckets, what's going on for them to be able to solve this problem with the least amount of problems? Alicia, you want to take this?
Well, I'm trying to think about the haziness. Maybe Richard can tell me what the haziness is. I'm stuck on that word, I guess.
I would be happy to jump in here because I think, to a degree, there has been some haziness. There's, while the HR process is intended to be consistent, repeatable, and something that protects you from a lot of federal and state regulation, whether it's private sector or in the government environment, its ability to accomplish what you need to have done and in the magic behind the curtain was a mystery. And quite frankly, working with Alicia, who she and I have known each other for a number of years, I've been able to understand what is very important to them around their responsibilities and both from a regulatory and from a process system. And she's been able to do that with me. The partnership that we've entered into to develop online processing from nearly end to end was one that was specific to me to serve my immediate needs to get the staff on board. And I think it served both of our needs by talking about it, getting the right people dealing with it, and demystifying the magic that was happening.
Yes, in HR, we have been applying lean principles to all of our processes, and I think we've made big improvements in terms of efficiency and effectiveness.
So, John, what do you think? How can we reduce the haze?
Well, I think the biggest haziness that has an opportunity area for us is that the requirements we have for the positions changes so radically, so quickly, that we have to find ways to improve the communication relative to what our needs are from a skill set perspective. Because what we need from a talent and skill perspective, it changes fairly rapidly in this industry, and we don't always have good descriptions relative to what we want, which I think at times can slow down the process.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and talk about the fact that haziness can be removed and some communication should be done. How about semantics? If we are trying to explain someone who is in HR with a mindset that HR doesn't understand IT, and HR is trying to explain what my needs are to preserve the culture, and IT doesn't get it, it just wants to go in its own, you know, path of 200 miles an hour, how does that marriage ever happen? How do you ever communicate, and what do we do to prevent what could be lost in translation just because both sides don't understand each other, or at least there's a perception or a belief that exists? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and discuss.
The looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
And here's my cell phone number, the number of the restaurant.
Honey, come on, he'll be fine.
The odds of a babysitter calling 911, 1 in 1,400. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism, 1 in 150. Here are some of the signs. No big smiles or other joyful expressions by 6 months. No back and forth sharing of sounds or facial expressions by 9 months. And no babbling by 12 months. To learn more of the signs, visit autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Stop wasting time. Get what you want. Live your dream life. The Dream Big Revolution. Imagine having more freedom, better health, more money, happiness. Could your business be more successful? Unless you're living the life you want, you're wasting precious time. Your life is too valuable to waste. Let Leanne Hilgers help you find health, wealth, and happiness. Listen in and live your dream life. Join the Dream Big Revolution. Tune in every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Seventh Wave Network.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back. So we are talking about a perception, and part of it could be reality, is that HR doesn't understand IT and vice versa. And in fact, if there is some haziness, part of that could possibly be attributed, if that is true, correct me if I'm wrong, is because the semantics is not understood. And that's why something may be getting lost in translation. So is that truly a problem? And if yes, could we just over-communicate and solve this? Or there is some learning and knowledge acquisition has to be done on both sides about respective, like the other party? Dick.
I think that there is some learning that needs to happen for us to be effective, particularly going into the future, because I see the problem getting worse in attracting and in retaining high-quality IT staff as the Generation X and Generation Y become more available to us in the workforce, and their needs are different. They travel quicker. They move through the system quicker. It could be difficult for us. And we talk in acronyms, and we look for skill sets that are difficult to describe and certainly difficult to put through the standard process. The flexibility that I've been able to work out with Alicia is something that others should pursue. It's development of trust and communicating in a language that's effective.
Alicia?
I agree. You know, if Richard has a problem in IT, he does not hesitate to let me know, and we work through it together.
So
it is in HR, in state government, there are literally thousands of jobs, and we in HR are not going to speak IT, just like we're not going to speak. The marine biologists speak, and the engineers who build and design highways. There is a common denominator, and that's where the communication occurs. I don't pretend to be an IT professional, and I don't pretend to know that language. But I do know and understand HR needs, whether it's talent acquisition or retention or management. I understand that piece.
So the question here is, and maybe Alicia and subsequently John can answer this, that if HR doesn't I mean, it's not that they don't want to. They would like to acquire as much knowledge as they can. But then if they don't know enough, then would a part of the process which requires them to understand what the IT manager or hiring manager is looking for, would that not be, jeopardized, the very interest be jeopardized there?
Well, I'll go back to what I said at the very beginning, and that is Richard does his own hiring. You know, we are not in charge of that process. The vast majority of his positions are direct hire. He is in charge of the process.
So you have volunteered to, you know, or the process itself says that, okay, if it's an IT job, then let the IT manager handle it from a technology standpoint.
With their oversight.
With their oversight, okay.
That's right.
It's a delegation to a degree of some authority with proper controls in place, and that's a little different. It's almost a decentralization of that role.
And when it comes to writing job descriptions, you know, we do it together. When it comes to establishing the salary, we do it together. And if we can't get to the salary that is needed to recruit the people that we want, because we have to operate within a system of job classification, then we can't establish stipends and add money to bring the salary up to the market.
So, John, what have you seen? Do you also follow the same type of process? Because I've seen some hybrids where HR takes control of the complete hiring. They say you're not going to talk as an outside party to the IT manager. We will be the one who will be doing all discussions, or we will be facilitating the conversations once you are shortlisted. And that shortlisting is many times done upfront by HR, who may not know exactly what the position is 100%, and they may not understand what this person brings to the table. So it could be a false positive situation. John?
Here in Iowa, the process is very similar to what Dick and Alicia have described in Maine, that the hiring manager owns the process and HR is there to advise and assist, but the manager has to do the screening and clearing of the candidates. And at times, I would say that's a very burdensome process for the manager because it does take a lot of time. In private sector positions where I have worked, the manager was more, as you described, Sanjong, of really last in line, that you got those false positives. And I don't think either process is the most effective. I'd like to see more proactive collaboration in the process up front so that HR can make sure the necessary procedures are followed and give qualified candidates for the HR the IT managers to talk to. So I think the collaboration and cooperation that Dick and Alicia have described is absolutely critical to the success of good hires in IT.
So would you, we as IT folks, we always talk about why doesn't IT get seat on the executive table? Then why not give HR on that IT table when you're discussing your strategies, your plans, your resource needs that may come up in the next 6 months? So there is some proactive discussion that starts happening. There could be some other strategies that could be put in place where HR reaches out to its internal resources or anybody outside as an agency that they may want to talk to and start exploring the options so that when you are ready, when you are ready, then they are too. So, Dick, you want to take this?
Well, it gets back to my earlier comments. I believe that we need to be more planful. I have not been always, and it creates the bottleneck that we know that we run into from time to time. If I can be the least bit planful, and I include Alicia and her folks in helping me achieve what I need to get done, I almost always am more successful than I would be on my own. And that goes without saying. If there is an area where I have the greatest difficulty, it's trying to get the salaries. Alicia's group has been very helpful to us to get them where they need to be. But with the rules that we have to play with, sometimes it's just not quick and flexible enough to get them to get the greatest talent. And that's something that we need to continue to work with, and she and I will do that, although I'm not certain we're in agreement. It's just where that how to solve that problem yet.
So, Alicia, do you think you would, if you've given a choice, you would take a lobby for, literally, for the HR folks to get a seat on that IT table across government and or private sector for this to become more, you know, useful and a more productive process?
Well, I don't know that we don't have a seat at the table when it's needed. My personal style is that you can't, from an HR perspective, you can't manage work unless you know the work. And when I was the director of HR at the Department of Transportation, I knew the work. You know, I wore a hard hat and steel-toed boots, and I was certified in ladders and confined spaces and stuff like that. But in the position I'm in now, that's impossible to do, especially with a staff of 10 to service all of state government. That has to be done at a different level than, but yes, Richard consults with HR when he needs to consult with HR. And would it be value added if I was more involved in his shop? Absolutely. But right now, quite honestly, I'm laying people off. I'm not acquiring talent. And I'm sure other states are in the same position.
So it's a resource crunch issue more so the strategy. So the ideal situation is what you could strive towards is to have enough room for you to be able to make time for that conversation, which is ongoing in the IT shop, and you be involved in it, just at least if nothing else, not contributing, at least listening to know what's coming. And you can plan for it better.
Yeah, and he does a great, his shop does a great newsletter. I read that. I'm up to date on, new projects. I have IT folks in my shop, and they keep me current. It used to be there were 40 people, and we had more resources. But as you know, management resources in state governments are dwindling, and we're relying upon technology to take that place, and that does not have a person, that personal touch that we used to have. Richard's got something to say here.
Well, I do. I think that certainly from automation and other things, we've made attempts to improve the process
that
these things are happening. One of the things we've talked a lot about of the hiring of staff, but there's a whole lot more that an HR office has for responsibility and that I'm finding out, and that conversation is something that really needs to take place. I think it's incumbent on the CIO or lead technology person to really understand this better. I think we need to understand perhaps better than they need to understand what IT is. We need to understand what are those rules and what are their responsibilities and what can they do for us. I know we're struggling a bit with the way we work IT folks. They're working odd hours frequently. They may have to work extended hours from time to time, particularly during an outage. And the type of compensation that we're able or not able to give them is as important to me as the actual hiring process.
Right.
I can be planful around the hiring process, but I can't necessarily be planful about an emergency that comes up or a failure in the system that I have to mobilize 8, 10, 20 people and work them for an entire weekend and have no mechanism to pay them. So I'm really focusing my energy to there as well.
So, yeah, John, go ahead.
Moving towards the... Is it John's turn? Okay.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead, Alicia. Finish your thought.
Yeah. Moving the conversation towards retention, there are a lot of retention issues, and Richard just described a couple of them, and that's compensation for all the additional hours the IT folk have to work.
So, John, very quick question, but let me lay it out, and then we'll take this up after the break. The fact that HR has is being perceived as a gatekeeper in many cases, and that may or may not be in government sector, but in many cases where they are kind of controlling the whole thing, I'd like to understand why is that perception developing? And if at all HR was to become a catalyst in understanding and interpreting the IT talent needs and also what other things that we have to do to build a very good IT shop, what would that be? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and talk more.
looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
And the pitch.
Dave just pitched a tomato, which won't work. But a healthy, vegetable-filled diet could give you energy to hit that grand slam. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Go inside the world of PR with PR Insider, hosted by public relations expert Maureen Kettis. Maureen will speak to the world's highest profile PR pros from the fields of marketing, advertising, and sales. And PR Insider will feature renowned members of the media as special guests. Maureen will give you a VIP access pass, including tips and tricks to take your business to the next level. PR Insider with Maureen Kettis, sponsored by Cision, us.cision.com. Listen every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Network.
From the stock market floor to your laptop, we are Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gal.
Welcome back. So, John, let's start with you. In terms of HR being perceived as a gatekeeper in many cases where, they may be preventing the organization or the IT leaders from finding the right people timely. Why is this perception existing there? And in fact, HR could be proactively helping understanding what IT talent needs are and facilitate talent acquisition. But I would like to add there, how about talent removal in case of reduction in force?
Well, again, I mean, I go back to the needs change so rapidly that if we don't communicate well from what the positions need to look like and what skills we need, we're going to fail on both sides of the process, both from an HR and an IT perspective. I think the challenge is the communications, as Dick and Alicia have pointed out. We absolutely have to be talking about what our needs are. We need to make sure they're involved as much as possible with what we see transpiring in the future. Right now, the challenge we face is reductions in force and what projects aren't going to happen and how do we deal with that. Now, one of the things we've done here is we've been very careful not to grow the organization in such a way and have used much more temporary workers and contract employees so that we're not affecting our full-time equivalents. However, the downside of that is when people look at that from a budgetary perspective, they look at the FTE headcounts and say, obviously, you're doing okay with what you have, we're going to freeze, and you can't hire any more temporary employees. That's one of the big challenges I have right now, is we use that as a methodology to control our FTE headcount, and now we're being controlled on the temporary headcount. And we don't have that all worked out yet, and that's really not an HR issue, but more of a control issue that's used from the powers that be over the budget.
And that's a good example, John, in California, when the governor there terminated the employment of all contract employees. It almost paralyzed the IT shop there for a while until they could react to that.
Now, this is an interesting item. When it comes to government, do you shelter a lot more compared to private and any worker IT or non-IT, and if suppose it is IT, do you think you see performance issues just because people who are entering the government may be feeling that, you know, my job is a little more secure than the rest? That's why the contractors would be the ones who will come and work a little harder and a little more? Dick?
Well, I'm not certain that I would say that they'll come and work a little harder or a little more. I think what we see is it's more related to skill sets and short-term nature. It is difficult to get someone to come on board for a short-term nature in this long-term system that we have. Once you hire somebody, you have a lot of trappings that go with that, the type of benefits, the potential for unemployment, and a whole lot of things that make it difficult for us. And one thing that we have difficulty is high-end skill sets. While I have the capacity to get the maybe some change made in what we would pay someone, it's not quick enough, and the impact across the rest of the organization is significant enough. I turn to the flexibility that I have in the contracted market. I just can't help it. And I do that, like John says, you do it more often than you realize. In fact, it has less process to go through, and the duration can be controlled much more easily.
So would you say this is more of a thing which is part because of the very need of finding right talent on time? So would this not be a great model for any company or organization to follow, that just keep a very lean organization in terms of full-time staffers, maybe put more so business analysts and project managers in here, and for all that ever-changing technology talent, just go outside?
It has to be the right mix. It depends on the degree of risk that you take from a much more transient workforce versus a very much more stable workforce. In private sector or in a government environment, you are much more likely to retain employees who are receiving all of the benefits that the organization has to provide than you would be to keep contracted staff who are much more transient and intending to move through that organization, and as the dollar tends to follow the money, so to speak. So I think you have to have a mix, one way or the other. Although if I was looking to start a business, that would probably be an area I would be looking at, because I believe that the staff augmentation is going to continue to grow as our budgets get tighter.
Well, you know, I'd like to jump in here for a minute. There are risks associated with that model. There is clearly an investment we make as technology professionals to teach and train those who join our organizations on how we do business. It is different from location to location, and the teaching training curve is going to differ from project to project, and they are far more transient. So the risk you're taking is you'll make that investment, and that transient worker will pick up and go for, you know, the next bigger project, because their objective is stability. They like longer-term arrangements, and short-term arrangements where you can't tell them what it's going to look like tends to create other challenges for you. So you have to do that risk evaluation about the right mix, as Dick indicated, for how you do this, because it's not there. I don't think there's a cookbook.
Now, from an HR perspective, would you want to challenge or go with the flow on this one, Alicia?
I'm certainly not going to challenge it. I agree. You know, as John said, FTEs are agencies receive FTEs from the legislature. And when we're in a downturn like we are now, we're not going to receive permission to create new jobs. So the workload continues, and you need to go to get contracted employees to get the work done. Now, as the recession continues, the workload we may not be able to put the projects out that we plan to. We may have to be canceling.
Now, we're coming to the job description evaluation and or what the need exactly is, and it's not uncommon for an IT manager to look for someone who's worked as I look for a clone of someone who worked in two or three or five different types of jobs within the same IT department, and the person decides to leave or retire, and then we try to look for a clone of that individual. That person may or may not exist, and then the holistic view of what work needs to get done, he's disrupting it. So it's a disruption is also an opportunity, because then we can take a second look at what everybody else is doing, how they can be retooled or they can share the load. And in many cases, that need could very well be removed because other people could have handled the load and you know, there's some more cleanup happening because of that. But invariably, we find that we do go for that purple squirrel. So, John, what do you think we can do to not have that happen more often than not?
Well, obviously, you know, the people who have long-term investments and have a broad variety of skills that they've brought to the table are something that adds risk to the organization, but simultaneously there's also a reward for that. But that knowledge transfer is really the issue you're talking about, is how do I make sure that I can transfer that those many years of experience into other parts of the organization, as well as to whomever is going to assume that role. In government, we tend to have these processes that don't allow you to plan for the inevitable, which is talent leaving the organization. We've worked out here where we're allowed to hire in advance for something we know is going to happen to get that cross-training done, that knowledge transfer. But it also, as you indicate, that you want the opportunity to look at your organization and say, am I doing it the right way? And is there a better way to do it?
So, Dick, have you come across a similar situation where you were trying to find this unique animal?
I certainly have. As we were preparing for the call, Alicia's actually in my office, and we talked about an individual that provided services to her organization but worked for me and who had retired not all that long ago. And once you begin to, as John said, peel back the covers of the work that was being done, you realized, one, what pressures you were putting on that individual and the effort that they had to put in, but also how if you knew what was going on or if you had a better understanding of what I think is probably a better way to put it, you would perhaps do things differently. And that's what we're trying to do, with doing things differently. And we chose, as a response to that, was to hire someone with real potential rather than hire someone with the skill sets. Yeah. Instead of looking for the purple cow, we took a cow that we thought we could paint to become purple. And I think that is really working out. It's been a year and a half or so, and it's really, really working out for us. And we had time to do that in this case because we had a reasonable support system. Now, conversely, if I'm in a situation where I don't have the time, I'm in a kind of, I know it when I see it. And that's the challenge that Alicia has with me, and I bet most HR places have with the IT person. I can't really tell you what it is I want in characteristics and skill, but I know it when I see it. And that's really what you're describing, that I have an individual, I know what they used to do, I know what they brought the skill sets, and so when I see that in a resume, I'm going to be okay. That's probably not the smartest way to do things, but that's human nature.
So, Alicia, when you see signs of something like this happen, what's your advice to the IT manager?
Well, actually, we don't see that happening that often because, as Dick said, in his organization, the IT organization, when someone leaves, you pick apart that job and see what that person was doing and if that is the most efficient and effective way of doing it.
I would argue, though, that the reason that we're doing that is because we're in that downsize
mode.
That's
right.
And so we're almost forced to do that. I would argue that, and we have been for several years with tight budgets here in Maine, and I think many businesses would be in the same situation. But in times where we had less difficulty with that, I'm not certain I would have been doing it that way.
Now, talking about money, we know that there is a you know, old saying there, that money's is not the biggest motivator, but the lack of it is the biggest demotivator. And that brings to a point where we could assign salaries to people or roles all day long, but then we have to keep in line with what's happening in the market. Sometimes you could get away with less. Sometimes you have to pay much more. And then that also becomes a very bottleneck many times, because of which a good talent standing at the door is not able to come in because your HR policy or your compensation policy prevents him or her from coming in. What type of dialogue should happen between HR and IT at that point? And how can we remove that obstacle for that unique individual and the opportunity cost of not being able to get that person in just because of a couple of $1,000s? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and discuss.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So money is not the biggest motivator, but lack of it is the one of the biggest demotivators. So salary being an issue, compensation, what is fair, what's not fair, if I really see what I want, and Dick is supposed looking at a resume, and if he knows what, I need this guy, but his guy is $5,000 more than what is written on paper as a compensation allowed. You're not able to hire. What's the opportunity cost? How can you get beyond this? Dick.
I think this is a problem that still is waiting to be solved, and we've gotten flexibility around stipends or other mechanisms to boost the level of salary, but I have to be careful that I don't impact others that are perhaps doing similar work within the organization. It's still a problem we haven't solved, and I will add one component to that. In this technology and in this industry, you can have two people with equivalent knowledges and abilities, and one is far, far more productive than another. The return on investment is much greater with the more productive person. I don't have an easy way to compensate them differently for the additional return on investment that I get. I think that I need that flexibility, and it's an area I know that we've agreed to talk about at some point.
How much do you think, John, this is a question I'd like to ask you as well, how much price discrimination is an issue? I mean, what I mean is price discrimination, it's actually salary discrimination. Because if I find someone at whatever price, but if the person is good, he'll get the job done. Why not bring them in versus looking at always, oh, what this other 20 people are going to think because they are working exactly the same thing?
Well, you know, I agree with Dick. This is an issue that we don't have solved in government yet. You also have to be smart about it because you have equity issues.
Absolutely.
In terms of organizational behavior questions, and here in Iowa, all salaries are public, and I believe that's probably true in most states. Here, it goes so far as that they're published, and I know that's been controversial, but if you create equity issues in your organization, you'll be fighting a different problem. So the system as it is, in some ways, keeps you from creating those kinds of equity issues. And is the best fit always going to be this person that appears perfect on paper, or should you take another couple of weeks and see if another candidate comes up? You don't always have that opportunity, and that's when you turn to temp workers. And I think it's a question of long-term versus short-term. a lot of the needs we tend to have are short-term in nature, whereas some number of the positions are more long-term, and the skills necessary are quite a bit different.
Now, Alicia, I just wanted to make sure that we hear from the two IT practitioners who are trying to solve and they don't have a ready solution there. From an HR standpoint, are you not where the buck stops in terms of what salary level should be there? So if you see that's happening more often than not, that, you know, because of salary we have people waiting in line to join, but we're not able to bring them in, isn't that your... don't you have the control over that and say, okay, let's increase it by 5,000?
Okay, let's go back to your first example of an employee, a potential applicant that needs 5,000 more than you're offering. In order to do that in Maine, we have a state law that says that Richard then has to look at all other employees in that work unit who are similarly situated and make sure that he's not bringing somebody in who has no track record in state government, and pay them more. So we have to do that. And then he has to figure out if he can afford to increase their salary in order to bring this person in. And as to your second question, we use a compensation system which establishes a salary range for each classification. And then we compare that to the market, and if it's not enough, if it's low, then we have stipends. And many of Richard's positions have 5%, 10%, 15% stipends on top of the salary range you're assigned to.
So basically you introduce variable component to get by.
That's right.
Okay. Now, coming to selling your organization to the candidates who may be already there, who may be outside to do some PR and are selling or marketing to them, and are the ones who are in the company, so in the organization, because if you don't do it, they may leave. And that selling doesn't only mean give them more salary. They have to be challenged, they have to be rewarded, they have to be motivated. As IT leader, you are in the trenches dealing with them day in, day out. You see the problems. You do that to some extent as an IT leader, as your role. Does HR come hand in hand and try to do that as well, or is there something in place where HR is automatically joining hands with you?
When I was in the private sector, HR took a much more active role in selling the company. In government, we have, if somebody's looking for a job in state government, we have a website. And that does a lot of the selling. It's not too much selling to do with state government.
Okay.
If I can jump in here for a minute, we spend a lot of time selling state government. One of the things that we have found has worked well for us is that the wide variety of things that government does for an IT professional can create lots of challenges for them because of the wide number of things that government does. I mean, we have everything from insurance claims processing systems to road planning systems and pavement temperature systems to hunting and fishing licenses. Great opportunities for an IT professional to be exposed to many facets of a business that they would not ordinarily get an opportunity to work in. So government has a great opportunity for an IT professional who has objectives to work in a wide variety of areas.
Dick?
I am in kind of the same place. We market our technology organization within here state government, or I think any place else. You market it, quite frankly, at the colleges and universities so that you can attract talented, trained in the latest technology people who are interested in getting having a career in information technology. And you hope you get the real gems, and you hope that they come and stay with you for a while. But if you pick the right ones, even if they're there for a shorter period of time, and the generation-wise, and particularly the millennials, they'll likely move on very quickly. You get that benefit right out of the chute. But we do spend a fair amount of time, and I think that has to be done by the IT organization with the support of the HR group, because it's the environment that they work in that's most important to people. What team are they going to work with, and how will they be successful?
Yeah. On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, John, Dick, and Alicia, for sharing your thoughts about about the troubled marriage. That's at least a perception, but I see that HR and IT is really trying to solve the problems together.
Thank you.
Are we done?
Thank you.
It's been an hour.
Thank you so much. Now, with IT becoming the very backbone for most organizations and the right talent becoming scarce, we have to go beyond isolated efforts from HR and IT to solve the problems. Now, HR and IT need to connect besides when it's time to just find, hire, or fire an IT resource or conduct performance reviews, which is, in fact, reactive. So while IT longs for a seat on the executive board, how about inviting HR to IT discussions and decision-making as much as possible, and then similarly, HR also needs to involve IT leadership while deciding on salaries, dress code, and overall office protocol to, say, foster a productive culture in the organization. IT workers are usually treated as different breed, different animal. However, the fundamental rules of identifying, motivating, rewarding, and retaining them are the same as any other business function, so we have to really work hard together as IT and HR to make this happen. What's happening in your organization? How closely is HR and IT working? Please send us your thoughts to views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog All next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.